It's been a year since I've made a podcast. And here we are again.
Have you used the equipment since?
Well, I used my equipment since? Yeah. That's not for the podcast listeners to hear. We can talk about that later on if you want some gossip. The rule for trans people tends to be, use it or lose it. Welcome back to Galactic Yo-Yo, everybody.
It seems that I'm some kind of a galactic yo-yo.
When he says, you can't see me.
And Stephen Moffat wasn't thinking about trans people when he wrote that. There's no way he was thinking about trans people when he wrote that. But, like, I feel seen when I watch that. And I feel something when I watch that. And, like, you can't fake that. You can't engineer that. And that's, I think that's a problem with a lot of stuff that's happening now with, you know, the awareness of all kinds of issues, not just LGBT people, but issues around race, issues around gender, is meaning that people with good intentions are putting representation in stuff in a well-intentioned way, and it's not landing because it feels engineered and manufactured when some of the best stuff comes from
when it's just organic
accident or things being organic and imperfect. Do you know what I mean?
It's hard, isn't
it? I love Lola by The Kinks.
If I was
right, I love that fucking song. Yeah. And it's not, and like, it's arguably quite offensive, but it's one of the first times I'd heard that, like, a person could exist like I exist. Do you know what I mean? And
I think,
you know, the song says, like, oh, she's a man. But, like, the terminology is, like, neither here nor there. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's about the feeling.
Autism waiting lists are kind of the only thing that comes close to, like, gender waiting lists, but not that close, because it's literally decades in some places, I think. It's
but I imagine
horrendous.
That there's a huge number of people who are on both.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of talk in the media about the Venn diagram of transgender people and autistic people. Yeah.
Which
there's a lot of negative chat about that.
A lot of assumptions that autistic people don't know their own minds and are all children.
A lot of that, and a lot of, like, yeah, like, maybe that is a pattern, and maybe that's fine.
The way that,
like, does it matter?
My understanding of the kind of evidence base is that, like, probably more autistic people are LGBT in general and trans in particular. We don't really know for sure. We also don't really know why. There's kind of a theory that, like, well, maybe autistic people are just more likely to be out because of, like,
because
caring less or being an outsider anyway.
Right.
So, but we don't know. And again,
I
had
never heard that.
It's only
viewpoint before.
You know, it's only a bad thing if you think being autistic or trans is a bad thing. So
this is,
you know,
yeah.
I am gender fluid, and I have my sense of self in regards to my gender, it wanders. It doesn't stay put. At this point, it leans feminine. I am on a hormone regimen, and I have been, you know, gender fluid or gender queer or something very clearly not just cis male, because I was born a man. I've been queer in some capacity for the entire run of the channel. I have not been out on the channel. I came out in January 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I came out publicly on the channel, but that wasn't a new development in my life. That was just me being open about it on the channel for the first time. Yeah. And since then, it was initially something that I, you know, I made public and I would occasionally bring to the forefront. And for a while, it was only like really evident when I would do, say, the monthly videos on LGBTQ plus representation. At this point, I just present however I'm feeling with pretty much very little regard for worrying if I am presenting masculine in certain videos and more feminine and others. Because there was a stretch of time where I still tried to present more masculine in the Doctor Who videos. I think I was just, I guess I thought that was my brand.
Sure. And, okay.
And I don't necessarily regret that, but over time, like having these hard dividing lines just didn't make sense after a while.
And has your audience been kind of broadly respectful of your gender identity?
Oh yeah.
On the channel?
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the most uplifting things I did, because I came out at the very end of a Q&A video that I released celebrating hitting 10,000 subscribers. And I made the video public and went to bed because I knew that if I did it any other way, I was just going to sit there and stare
and waiting for refresh the comments. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I uploaded it and I went to bed.
Uh-huh.
And
very wise. What
I was expecting to wake up to was a sizable drop in subscribers. I was expecting to lose like anywhere from 1 to 500 subscribers since the video went up. And I was expecting a crap ton of what the hell is this comments. And neither happened. There was an amazing outpouring of support. There was no, there wasn't even really a blip of a loss of subscribers from that video. I was welcomed.
That's so encouraging.
It was really wonderful. It was really amazing. And it helped a lot because, you know, I'd been out to friends and family for years up to that point, but I wasn't online out.
Sure.
Really. So sure. It's funny. Every now and then I get the question. So tell us about coming out. And I'm kind of like, when?
Yeah,
which time?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's coming out to your significant.
Thing, yeah, there's that thing, isn't it? As a queer person or as a transgender person, you're coming out like every day. You're coming out to different people all the time.
Like there's a whole range of, you know, come out to my significant other, my family, my friends, my online friends, the general public, my coworkers. It just goes on and on. It never stops.
Yeah, when I came out on the podcast, I did it about 6 months after I'd come out in real life, and I'd sort of been, I wasn't sure how my podcast listeners were going to take it, so even though I should have never been worried about that, because I know my podcast listeners and they're lovely people. I think I was just, yeah, I was worried about Twitter, so I kept it to myself for a while, and then the whole controversy with Gareth Roberts happened. And I felt very vindicated by that. So I decided in that week to come out on the podcast. But I did it in a little clip right at the end of an episode so that I knew that who I was talking to would be my, you know, my core listenership rather than just any kind of passing trade. So I felt a little bit safer. And yeah, the response has been really positive. But, you know, with a podcast that kind of all kinds of other challenges present themselves, because although I'm physically presenting differently than I used to, I've not really done a lot to change the way I speak. So I imagine for listeners, it's a bit jarring because, well, I still sound exactly like I sounded before, which must be, which must be kind of tricky for a listener. But it's been interesting.
Voice work is what's really annoying, because like at this point, you know, I've been on T blockers for, I think, going on 4 years soon, and I've been on estrogen for about 8 months. But see, the thing is, none of that does anything to your voice. The only thing that changes your voice is time and practice. Uh-huh. And like, I can pitch my voice up. I can bring it up and I can go softer with it and I can go a bit more feminine with it, but it is something that I have to consciously do.
And yeah, so I, yeah. I'm really not there yet. And
because
I have to be cool with that. Yeah,
I decided to transition, which is very embarrassing. like, it's embarrassing the way being a teenager is embarrassing, except yeah. like
it feels like a second adolescence in a lot of ways, in my experience.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I knew that because I knew that that was what it would be because everyone says it. They're like, it's going through another puberty. Mm. It's going through another adolescence. And then, and I thought, but I'm not going to be that bitch. You know, yeah. I'm going to be better than that.
Yeah.
Like, and then, and now I look yeah. back at photos of myself and I'm like, why did I think that that was
you
me?
You always think it's not that? You. That's so true. And I'm sure I'll be, I'm laughing now. But I'm sure, you know, I'm relatively speaking very, very early in my transition. So I'm sure that in 2, 3, 4, 5 years time, I'm going to look back and think, oh, my God, what was she thinking then? You know,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's yeah, it is embarrassing. And I can understand the reluctance to put that on camera.
But also, like, I look back on myself now and I do think, OK, what was with that weird bowl cut? Why did you do that? But also, I think, God, how fucking brave I was. Because nowadays, like, the idea of going, I used to work at a Debenhams and I just went to work one day with like fake tits and I bleached my hair and dyed it pink. Mm. And it'd been after like a week off, I went with these fake tits and I don't know if this is too intimate for your podcast, but like I went to work and everyone thought I'd gotten a boob job, but I was also still using like the men's locker room in sure. the work in the like, and so I went to work looking, for lack of a better term, looking like a man with tits and a bowl cut. And I just was like, fuck all of you, if any of you, you know, come at me, bro. Like, and I was just so,
I'm
like,
looking at the like, bowl cut right now, and I have to say, I think it's iconic.
Oh, it's, thank you.
Yeah, it, I mean, it's a stunning colour. Looks great on you. I don't think you've got anything to be worried about.
Oh, God. Thank you. I just think my head is too big to have that smaller hair. Anyway, but I just, yeah, I just looking back in that period of time, I think I was very brave in a way that I kind of feel like I'm not anymore. Like, I don't, because now I, despite what various commenters on YouTube will tell me, like, I do pass and, like, it's not, like, a problem in my life. I, like, people don't stare at me because I'm trans. Mm. People stare at me because they think I'm a lesbian because I'm holding hands with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't get harassed on the streets for being trans. I get harassed on the streets for having a girlfriend. And... yeah, so it's like, I don't know, being, I'm not, I don't consider myself to be stealth or anything, but like, I guess my life is stealth enough and I'm so used to people not looking at me twice and not noticing that I'm trans, that the idea of like walking into a Debenhams with 60 co-workers and just saying fuck you to everyone is terrifying. I just can't believe that I did that. But I think when you're ready to transition, you just kind of, you either you're brave or you're not going to do it. So
yeah, every part of it is scary, right? So you've just kind of, you've no choice but to go for it. Yeah. I mean, I've had a similar thing. Like I remember the first time, my girlfriend and I got in a cab. This is maybe 18 months ago. We got in a cab and the cab driver started, interrogating us about the fact we were in a same-sex relationship, right? And it was really weird because it was the first time that I'd faced any... I mean, he wasn't harassing us. He was just clearly from a different culture and was interested, right? But he... Mm-hmm. It was the first time I'd faced questions about being in a lesbian relationship rather than being visibly trans. And it was really odd. And I remember just sitting there and remaining completely silent because I thought, if I speak and this guy hears my voice, the questions are gonna get out of hand. So I remained completely silent. I let my cisgender girlfriend answer all the questions, and I'm very grateful to her that she was my spokesperson on that occasion. But yeah, very, very weird. What about the trans stuff?
Yeah, this is the elephant in the room. Yasmin Finney's great.
Is she?
I think she's good.
I didn't think her acting was very good.
I liked her in Heartstopper.
I haven't seen Heartstopper, so I can't comment.
Yeah, obviously it's not...
I didn't enjoy her acting, and that's an opinion that has been repeated by a number of right-wing publications.
Okay. Fair enough. It's like, oh, Russell, he's trying. God damn it, he's trying.
He is trying.
Bless him, his heart's in the right place.
It didn't quite land.
No.
How did you feel about it as a non-binary person? Because I am not a non-binary person, and you are.
Yeah, like Rose Noble, I am trans-feminine non-binary.
But is she? Because I wasn't sure. Obviously, she said non-binary at the end, but I felt like the implication throughout was that she was a binary trans woman, and then they sort of like...
Yeah.
It was odd. And Yasmin Finney is not non-binary.
No.
As far as I'm aware.
No. As far as I'm aware. But it's watching that episode, like, it was really rushing towards that ending. It was sprinting. And then we get there, and the whole, like, binary, non-binary thing, I'm like, well, that happened. That was a thing.
Yeah.
And the implication is that her transness is directly caused by the metacrisis, which I am not that keen about.
Yeah, I don't love that.
Why couldn't she just be trans? Because trans people exist anyway without alien intervention.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that aspect. Is that what they were implying, do you think?
I think so, because like the whole we're binary, she's
yeah,
not.
True.
Because the doctor is male, female, and neither and more. I love that quote, just taken in isolation.
Yeah.
Like, inject that shit into my veins.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's the line which like has a lot of discourse around it right now, the whole male presenting Time Lord bit, which, again, I'm not a fan of.
It was clunky.
It was very clunky. It kind of undermined that whole line as well.
Exactly.
And then,
it's like, oh, if he's... But it's like they can't have their cake and eat it, right?
So
they can't. Because they can't. If they were to follow the first quote you mentioned through, then the doctor would basically like be trans, right? And I don't think they can like in good faith tell the audience that the David Tennant doctor is trans. Like it just wouldn't work.
No.
I'm just really aware that this is so not my place to say.
No, go on.
But you should be like, is this person gorgeous? Then I'll say it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a very.
And if they're not gorgeous, never say it. If you see someone and they're not gorgeous, especially if they're transgender, then just don't say anything.
Is this true advice?
It's sort of, actually, yeah. Like, I was kind of joking, but yeah, sort of.
I actually think that is true. I think...
Like, one thing I've struggled with is, like, people telling me I'm gorgeous or, like, saying things about my appearance that they clearly don't mean. And that's not me being, like, woe is me, like... I know when I look good and I know and I actually know which people are going to like the clothes I'm wearing, for example. And, you know, often I can tell that like compliments, especially strangers give me are grounded in a sort of discomfort with like.
What they're saying is I've noticed that thing.
Yeah. Which is uncomfortable.
Mm.
However, yeah, I didn't really feel that was what that bit of the episode was getting at.
Mm.
And actually like, I felt like, a subject like that would have been impossible for that episode to grapple with. I missed that in season two.
Yeah.
But the thing I liked was the boyfriend character that they brought in, the love interest for Claire.
Bitch.
And I thought it was a really like nuanced kind of exploration of what it's like to like fall in love as a trans person or like, I thought it was really good.
Sickening. Honestly, like Juno was so good for that because like, how many representations of like trans people in love or in relationships or being
so few
or will you never get that, and like a really like accurate representation as well of like she was feeling like he was like ashamed of her and like ghosting her, and then you know like you know that sort of stuff, and then like just like the like the lovely representation of having a positive ending, and like think just that is so important.
I think I really like that. I don't know whether you agree, but like when I think a lot of the time stories about trans people in film and television and elsewhere are kind of split into it's all hunky-dory, everything's great, positive stories, and then like stories about
trauma.
Experiences of trauma and transphobia and whatever. And I like the ones where it's like something in the middle, you know,
yeah,
and I think this was
that's
that
real.
Way. It's like depicting some of the things that we go through, and also that maybe some of the ways that well-intentioned people struggle with, you know, my mother, right, as wouldn't want me saying this on a podcast, but has struggled with certain aspects of my transition. We've gone through different stuff, but ultimately we're in a really good place. And like overall, do you know what I mean?
That
and
makes
I think
it more beautiful. If anything, that makes it like I feel like that's even more special to be told. Then
yeah, and I think it's good to like.
And that's
depict
the majority of the experience,
right?
Well.
It's the majority. Like the majority isn't one or the other.
It's not a Disney film.
It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, sometimes it's one or the other. But it's.
I'm very lucky. Because mine is the other. Mine is like perfect with it. So, but most people, I'd say, are like somewhere in the middle. Where,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
It took like coming round and like explaining things and
definitely. You know, so it's nice to see that. And we saw that on the TV version recently with Yasmin Finney's character.
Yes. Oh,
you know,
love Yasmin.
Thingy, her grandmother. Did you see the episode? Or?
yeah, no, so I still
in,
know
in the episode,
who.
Her grandmother is girl. Like... it's like.
Yeah. I already mentioned that Doctor Who has a flawed but real but genuine liberatory streak. I think it is fundamentally about finding new horizons or just better ways of being, which is a pretty integral part of a lot of queer lives. But I mean, I think particularly trans lives is that we kind of spent like a big portion of our life is spent on just figuring out a new way of being, and sometimes in a world that's hostile to that. So like, and Doctor Who, it's like the world is scary and hostile and huge,
sure,
but that's also kind of fucking awesome.
Definitely.
Which and so that's why you have so many queer people hopping aboard the Doctor, like Bill and Captain Jack and Egg Stephen Moffat. I didn't say that.
Well, I mean, and outside of the universe of Doctor Who as well, it's always been a show that has historically appealed to, you know, queer and LGBT people, hasn't it? And you know,
I wouldn't know anything about that.
fandom has spent a long time kind of trying to figure that out, why that is and why that might have happened. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, throughout the 70s and 80s and 90s, I'm thinking about the massive circle of, you know, gay male fans that then sort of took on the show in, you know, when New Who came around. And then I'm thinking about the sort of smaller community of trans fans that seems to exist in the modern day. What do you think the reason is for that for you?
I think it is very much that I suspect trans people just kind of like broadening horizons because we're just kind of used to that overall.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting what you said about finding new ways of living and it being to do with hostility. And I think it is to do with hostility from the rest of the world. But I think it's also to do with discovering new ways of living that we didn't even know were there. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of the trans experience, certainly for me, is about that. It's about discovery of a new way of living that the world had never presented to me. And I think that Doctor Who plays into that very well, of ordinary people, previously ordinary people, discovering new horizons and discovering new ways of living and new, you know, new modes of being.
I'm transgender. I have been calling myself Molly now since last year. My friends are all calling me Molly. It's one of those things that's dawned on me over time, and it's just I've kind of come to realise it's not going to go away really. So I had to tell my podcast listeners at some point. So I suppose now in this tumultuous time in Doctor Who fandom, it's as good a time as any. It kind of feels more like an act of defiance than anything else. But yeah, I'm Molly Marsh, and that's how I'm going to stay for the foreseeable future. It shouldn't really change anything about the podcast. It shouldn't really change anything about the way that anybody thinks of me. And if it does change the way that you think of me, sorry. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm really sorry. But yeah, I suppose that's that. There's nothing else to really say about it other than that's how I'll now be listed in the episode credits. That's how I'll introduce myself at the start of the podcast. And that's who I am. It's a tricky one, really, because it seems like not a big deal to me, but I realise it probably is a big deal. So I don't want to be too glib about it, but oh, here's the bus. But yeah, I thought it was important to tell you. Anyway, that's all from me. Next week on the podcast.